is one of America's prominent sports commentators and columnists,
known for his fearless opinions and passionate dialogue.
I know it's sad, but the best sports conversation has absolutely nothing to do with sports.
He has perfected the Daily Sports Podcast, having produced hundreds of topical, credible shows without even a hint of fake news.
No filters, no mute buttons, no BS, just me and whatever the hell I feel like talking about.
He has done 1,700 TV shows, written 8,000 columns, broadcast hundreds of talk shows, published a book.
He has covered every major sports event nationally and worldwide.
And yet, we still can't shut him up.
The ceiling is the roof.
And now from Los Angeles, inside his studio by the Pacific Ocean,
where he plans on hanging out with a beer immediately after this podcast is recorded.
Oh, man.
Here he is, Jay Mariotti.
The show is unmuted. I'm Jay in Los Angeles, and a sports league is nothing without competitive integrity, an airtight pledge to ethical detail for tens of millions of consumers out there. And yet, just days before the Super Bowl, the NFL has yet to say if it will push to enact an urgently needed rule change, that being making pass interference calls subject to instant replay review. This means Roger Goodell's State of the League press conference in Atlanta next week, which could have been a chance for the commissioner to blow the NFL's horn in its bounce-back season, instead becomes another shit show, this time focusing on how a $15 billion a year league in the height of a technological boom on planet Earth allowed an NFC championship game to be determined by a historically bad call that missed both pass interference and a helmet-to-helmet violation. All of this as the NFL prepares for the onslaught of legalized gambling, with millions of bettors petrified that a horrible call will ruin his or her, pick one, day, week, year, or life. As it is, problem gambling is an epidemic in this country. Now we're going to raise the suicide rate because of agonizingly brutal officiating?
All you need to know about sports today in 15 minutes, or maybe 18, you know, depending on the Warriors, the Steelers, Trump, and the LeBron James Media Network.
So, in a recurring theme this decade, the NFL trips over itself again. Through its various crises under Goodell, the league has been slow to admit mistakes and thus repeatedly has sabotaged its credibility. Now, in a week when Saints owner Gail Benson has rebuked the league and Saints fans have filed lawsuits and put up billboards all over Atlanta, including the French-inspired NFL Blewett. That would be spelled B-L-E-A-U-X. I love that. The league's non-response has allowed a Super Bowl between the Rams and Patriots to feel as if a giant asterisk should be placed atop Mercedes-Benz Stadium. It's not enough to fire officiating boss Al Riveron and throw money at the Fox Sports officiating analyst Dean Blandino. No, the league and its competition committee decided not to review pass interference calls, and already you have competition committee member and Broncos boss John Elway dismissing the idea, saying, and I quote Elway, "You can't replay every pass interference. It won't work." And then you have Stephen Jones, also on the committee, he's the son of Jerry, echoing those thoughts. Well, gentlemen, instead of being so thick-headed, how about this? Why not review a pass interference situation at the video crew's behest, the officiating crew as well, in the final 5 minutes of a game? Get it right. And if you don't want to do it, why can't Goodell enter the process and exert his powers for the good of the sport? As long as doomsayers like Elway and Jones persist, the possibility will remain for more debacles that sabotage Super Bowl dreams and overwhelm postseasons. I don't want to talk about this. I'd rather talk about the matchup. Thus, the NFL and Goodell deserve all the criticism that awaits them. And once again, the Super Bowl will be muddled by another NFL crisis, this one completely preventable. Even when this league finally gets something right in a season of exciting close games, new superstars, an emphasis on safety, and a minimum of politics, Roger Goodell and the gang still screw things up. Not that legions of Patriot haters care, but the officiating debacles last weekend, and I should say debacles, remember the other game, have overshadowed a mind-boggling reality. The Patriots from New England are in the Super Bowl for the ninth time since 2002, and they're trying to win number six, which means in a competitive paradigm that impedes NFL dynasties, or it's supposed to anyway, the Patriots are carrying on an all-time sports legacy with one of Bill Belichick's least impressive teams exactly 17 years. 17 years since Belichick and Tom Brady, as true underdogs, beat the St. Louis Rams in the greatest show on turf for their first title. It's not supposed to happen this way, folks. Longevity, 17 years. In this day and age, nope. How are they getting this done? And you can't say they're cheating this year. Nope. So feel free to call this Belichick's best coaching job. And Brady, dear Lord, after a week of dropping F-bombs and playing that absurd us-against-the-world underdog card, here he is yet again, the greatest quarterback ever, trying to win another championship at age 41 after playing so marvelously in defeat last February. Brady truly is the baddest mother bleeper on the planet, as he screamed in the locker room last week. I told a friend of mine that, and he said, that doesn't sound like Tom. Oh, that's Tom. This is a new Tom. It's like he's going through midlife crisis or something. 41, that's about the age, right? And if he wasn't fazed by a green laser allegedly pointed at his face from the stands in Kansas City, do you really think Brady is going to lose this Super Bowl after coming so far this season? So many obstacles to these L.A. Rams. The Brady we have seen for years, as polished up by wife Giselle, is homogenous and strictly PC. But these last 2 weeks, we're seeing TB12 unplugged. It's as if he's sick of it all. He's sick of being Tom Brady, and he's just going to say what he wants. And he honestly is more likable this way. After all of those F-bombs last week, he goes on Boston TV immediately after the win in Kansas City and drops an F-bomb. Then here was Brady making his way through that victorious locker room, dropping more F-bombs. You're going to hear Tom, a bunch of F-bombs all over the place, but you can hear Tom dropping several while hugging the likes of Rob Gronkowski, Julian Edelman, and Marcus Cannon.
Actually, Jay, it appears that the New England Patriots have removed that video and consequently the sound of that video because of copyright infringement, which means they didn't want us playing it here on Unmuted or anybody else playing.
And then finally, Brady posted a video on Instagram in which he and Gronkowski flashed these smug smiles to the camera without saying a word before the clip flips to Diddy's Bad Boy for Life blaring in the background. I don't know if Tom's doing his own social media or this is somebody else, but I wouldn't even imagine Tom Brady knowing Diddy or Bad Boy for Life. But that's what happens. And then as the video ends, the words "still here" appear on the screen. I think this is a midlife crisis. And then naturally, a Massachusetts brewery, Treehouse, inscribed "baddest MF-er" on the bottom of 26,000 cans. So those people in New England who always whine and complain about something and they're kind of psycho, they have yet another Super Bowl with the potential for a 12th championship this century. We're not even in the third decade yet. I hate those people. They're really out there, especially the sports media, just completely amateurish. Not Boston Globe people. I'm talking about these website whack jobs. And yet they're at it again. Just ignore them. If you have a brain in your head, if you've attained a certain level of success in life, ignore those barstool because they have people, because they'll all be in the gutter and dead in, 10 years, maybe five, maybe next week. Brady is just having too much fun to lose now. He's surely aware of what this could do for his legacy. And maybe, just maybe, he retires and Belichick retires. Have you thought about this? If they do win, I think that's going to be a major storyline next week. What more would they have to accomplish if they, after just a few weeks ago looking down and out, both of them come back, do their best work, and win a Super Bowl? What more do they do in this sport? They're going to come back again. More monotonal Bill Belichick, another year of Tom Brady yelling at the world. It would be the perfect ending. I implore them, please, if you win this game, both of you, retire. You're the greatest quarterbacking, coaching collaboration maybe in the history of sports, certainly in the NFL. What more do you need to do? I'm getting ahead of myself here, but you know where I'm going if they do win, and I think they will win. Already, Brady and Josh McDaniels are figuring out ways to exploit the motor mouth Marcus Peters. And I realized the Eagles a year ago were big underdogs too, and the Patriots do have their flaws, especially if Jared Goff continues the sharp, dynamic passing game that wore down the Saints. But I keep going back to what is so utterly preposterous about this matchup of geezers versus millennials. Belichick and Rams coach Sean McVay, who turns 33 this week. Wow, my God, that man, he needs some Viagra. Sean McVay, 33. They are separated by 33 years and 283 days. Okay, Belichick and McVay. Belichick is 66. While Brady and Goff are separated by 17 years and 72 days. Both obviously the largest age gaps in Super Bowl history. And much as I'd enjoy watching the Patriots go down again, I don't, you know, there's a lot I don't like about this dynasty. They cheated. Certainly they deflated footballs. We can quibble about Spygate. Who knows what else they've done? The phones going out in the stadium on the opposing sideline at Gillette Stadium. Who knows what they've been doing? It's not an honorable dynasty, but it blows me away, the longevity of it, that they can keep at it and keep winning over a two-decade span is just phenomenal, stunning stuff. And I'd be stupid to pick against the Patriots when the experience factor is so absurdly whopping. Here was McVay, who has had more success at a young age than almost any coach in American sports history. Who else would that be? Paying respects to the Patriots and doing a pretty good job of not sounding awestruck.
A lot of respect for them. They've been doing it as consistently as any organization in the history of this league. And I've gotten a chance to get to know Coach Belichick a little bit. I've had a relationship with Josh McDaniels. Really, we practiced against those guys when I was in Washington early on and kind of have kept in contact with them. And, you know, they're a team that you're always watching the way they do things, and you just have so much respect for the way that they've operated over the last handful of years.
Keep in mind, McVay was a high school sophomore when the Patriots won their first Super Bowl, not all that long ago. The year before, for his 14th birthday, barely out of puberty, McVay attended the game in Atlanta when the Rams, then in St. Louis, beat the Tennessee Titans. 14 years old? This guy really is Doogie Howser.
You know, I was so young at the time, but, you know, I remember it was a great game. I remember, you know, for whatever reason, I really always respected the, you know, both the offenses. I thought Eddie George was outstanding, Steve McNair's ability to create off schedule, Javon Kearse, that was his rookie year where he was having a lot of success, and then you look offensively at Kurt Warner and how prolific he was. I can still remember Torrey Holt catching that slant, Isaac Bruce making big plays, Marshall's versatility, so... Just a fan of the game and watching that. And, you know, I'll tell you what's so unique is you get a chance to be, you know, in this role and the exposure that it gets you to people that you have so much respect for. Coach Vermeil's a guy that, you know, he texts you after all the games and he's been so supportive. And, you know, watching the way that he connected with those guys and you know, he wasn't afraid to, you know, say I love you to these guys. And, you know, I think those players could feel how much he really cared about them and how much he was invested. And you talk about some of the adversity that team specifically, being our organization, faced early on in the year when no one gave him a chance, but they kept believing. Kurt Warner went on to have such a great season. But, And then I also remember it was very icy then, so it was a real problem for us to get there. But it was a great game, and you know, my grandpa got us tickets, and that was a good birthday present for me.
Belichick has been so good this last month, the Chiefs fired their defensive coordinator, Bob Sutton, which, by the way, is typical scapegoating in that the head coach, Andy Reid, greenlit Sutton's game plan going into the AFC title game. But when it didn't work out, whack Bob Sutton. Somebody's got to get the ziggy. Say this for McVay, the Rams figured it out in the league's loudest stadium, the Superdome, even as they were having trouble getting early plays called in the din. And even as top five league offensive weapon Todd Gurley essentially was benched for poor performance. You're going to need the real Todd Gurley in the Super Bowl to have any chance. Goff did take control of that huddle. Very impressive for him. The likes of Aaron Donald and Ndamukong Suh anchored the defense. And I also should say this, if Saints coach Sean Payton, who is leading this angry charge against the NFL officiating machine, does not inexplicably throw the football on first and 10 before that pass interference non-call, why are you throwing there? If you just run the freaking ball, we wouldn't even be having this discussion, and the Saints would be going to Atlanta. Just wanted to point that out. I admit it, I'm enjoying the Tony Romo broadcast booth revelation as much as anybody. His joy rubs off on the audience and his extraordinary ability to call plays before they happen. I mean, how did this man only go 2-4 in the postseason and never advanced beyond the divisional round as quarterback of the Cowboys? As Chris Long said, it's as if Romo has Miss Cleo in his earpiece.
Oh, they're killing it. Usually means a motion and a run out wide to the right. Here's the handoff and to the end zone.
There he is.
On the top of the screen.
If he's doubled, you're going to throw inside right here to Edelman. You just look up there and pick him.
Here they come after Brady. Goes down the field to Gronk. Turns around, makes the catch.
Gronk's not offside. You got to chip with him, and throw to Edelman over the middle of the field.
Pass down the middle. Caught. Edelman holds on.
Gronk is out wide. Watch the top of your screen. Watch this safety. If he comes down, there's a good chance he's throwing out there.
It's Gronk for the first down.
New England tried to play action earlier. I can't see it here. This has to be a run.
Second and goal to Burkhead. Burkhead to the end zone. Hello, Super Bowl. New England is heading back again for the third straight year.
But let's not take this Romo craze too far. Twice this offseason and once during the regular season, three NFL teams have contacted Romo about returning to play football. He's nearing age 39, and granted, Brady, Drew Brees, Phillip Rivers, Ben Roethlisberger are extending the quarterbacking career span far beyond the established norm. But Romo, let's remember, used to drive us all bonkers as a quarterback. You know, he'd throw 5-6 touchdown passes in a game, then end the game with a bad interception. That was Tony. In the broadcast booth, he's the perfect game companion across all demographics. I can't come up with a better phrase. He's like the best guy ever to sit next to and watch a game with. And he is a much-needed ambassador for the NFL and for CBS, which had been suffering when Phil Simms was paired with Jim Nantz. It sounds as if Jim Nantz has new life. I mean, you hear Nantz, he's like, oh, God, I got Tony Romo with me. Tony Romo. CBS is ready to reward Romo with a gigantic contract, but if Romo and his agent are smart, they'll wait for a bidding war. Even though I know NBC likes Chris Collinsworth and Fox is happy with Troy Aikman, Romo could be a godsend for that downward spiraling Monday night fiasco at ESPN. I mean, what they're doing now, they're bringing it back next year. It's a joke. You bring in Tony Romo for Monday Night Football as the new ESPN president breaks bread with Roger Goodell. You might save Monday Night Football. Oh, I know. They had to lay off thousands of people. Sorry, never mind. If it's possible to be a perfect Hall of Famer, Mariano Rivera came close. He's the greatest closer of all time with a record 652 saves over a 19-year career, including unheard of October dominance during the Yankees' 5 World Series run. And he was the portrait of grace and quiet leadership with not even a hint of scandal in a city where media people smell stench 24/7. He became the first player to win the unanimous Hall of Fame vote, appearing on all 425 ballots. And who wasn't happy for Rivera when he received the news with his family?
Yes. You are the first person.
No! 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 No!
Rivera was accompanied in this Cooperstown class by the best designated hitter of all time, Edgar Martinez, and 2 worthy pitchers in Mike Mussina and the late Roy Halladay. All class, those 4. And I'm pleased to report as well that Roger Clemens and Barry Bonds made only minimal gains, only in the 59 percentile, still far from the 75% vote needed with only 3 years left on the ballot. Tick, 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 tick. I love it. I would never vote for these guys. I've told you this a zillion times, not only because they were juicers, but because you'd then have to let in Alex Rodriguez and all the others, Manny Ramirez. I can't do that. No, they're juicing. No, no. But I would like to see transparency from those who shun Clemens and Bonds on their ballots. Of the 232 voters who went public with their ballots, 71.1% voted for Clemens and 70.6% for Bonds. It's as if they want the world to know their collective pro-PED stance. I know they'll say, well, no, we're not pro-PED. Well, yeah, if you're voting yes for them, you don't care about the PEDs. Yeah. But here's the thing. Of the 193 voters whose ballots are still private, only 45.6% voted for Clemens and 45.1% for Bonds. This according to Ryan Thibodeau, that freak analytics guy who follows this stuff, the Hall of Fame voting. What are they afraid of, these 193 who don't want their names out there? Make your names. It's transparency, folks. That's what it's about. If you don't attach your name to it, you're not a legitimate journalist. You shouldn't be voting, certainly. I would have voted for Curt Schilling, regardless of his politics, but he received only 60.9% of the Hall vote. Before you know it, of course, pitchers and catchers will be reporting. And yet, Bryce Harper and Manny Machado remain unsigned as the owners wage a cold collusion war before the 2021 labor storm that just might bury the sport. It's waning in relevance, and yet the owners, all they want to do is fight the union. You had this wonderful day. Mariano Rivera would have set up the season just nicely, and yet we're waiting on Bryce Harper and Manny Machado. It's called collusion. These owners suck. These owners suck. All rotten. And Serena Williams, seemingly cruising to a record-tying 24th Grand Slam title at the Australian Open, turned her left ankle just 1 point from victory. That led to a stunning collapse from a 5-1 lead to a blown third set loss to Karolina Pliskova, who fought off 5 match points. And now, after that embarrassing meltdown at the U.S. Open, it appears Williams, at 37, is vulnerable to the sort of injuries and breakdowns that jeopardize her reign. Should Serena have retired when there was no doubt she was still on top? Here was Williams after the crushing loss.
Yeah, I guess it's, I mean, the big picture for me is always winning, you know. I'm not going to sit here and lie about that. But it hasn't happened yet, but I feel like it's going to happen. Just keep taking it one match at a time and just keep soldiering on, I guess.
You still have the fire.
Yeah, absolutely.
And recalling the global love-in when Tiger Woods finally won his first tournament in 5 years, he does remain the biggest story in golf, with this the predominant question as his season begins at Torrey Pines. Will he win a major? I'd love to see it, bringing full circle closure to his decade of hell, but sorry, I can't go there. He's 43, he's still vulnerable to the same back and knee issues, and this year, if you haven't noticed, the PGA has a condensed schedule as the PGA Championship moves to May, meaning Woods has a grueling road of majors. Masters in April, PGA in May, U.S. Open in June, British Open in July. There is little time to rest and recuperate, and this new burden is not conducive to rising up and winning a major when he's just trying to stay healthy. Here is Tiger realizing that the expectations have changed dramatically.
Oh, way different. I know what my body can and cannot do. And so last year was a very fluid and it was like trying to hit a moving target last year. And it was quite interesting to try to figure it all out as the year progressed and it evolved. And this year I have a great understanding of what I can and can't do. And there's not that uncertainty that I had, you know, going into the year last year. After what I did at the end of last year, playing a 7 out of 9 weeks was quite a bit. Body held up better than I thought it would, even though I got pretty tired at the end. Overall, it held up pretty good.
Now it's time for The Buzz, our deep dive into sports and life. Chris joins the program. And Chris, I've seen generational gaps in my lifetime in sports, but nothing quite like this in team sports in a major moment. It's, I know, early to do predictions, but I cannot see Brady in F-bomb mode and Belichick losing the Super Bowl with so much experience in the tank against Sean McVay and Jared Goff and the Rams. What's your pick here? And if the Patriots win, might this indeed be the end for Brady and Belichick?
Jay, there's a part of me that thinks that the Rams will pull it off because the Cinderella story, when you have that Cinderella momentum, similar to the Eagles last year, it just carries you through. I thought the Rams were going to lose to the Cowboys, then the Saints, and then, you know, everything goes in their favor to actually be playing in the Super Bowl. So you would think that maybe that can carry them through. But can you really go against the Pats in this one? I would say no. I think the Pats are going to win. And simply put, they're pissed off about last year. If not for, what, Philly, Patriots probably win that Super Bowl. The year before, they come back against the Falcons. They blow, you know, they end up pulling out that win in overtime. I think the one thing, if it is the end for Brady and Belichick, they want this one to be domination. Not a close game, not a comeback in the fourth quarter, but where the Patriots just blow them away. And considering this is the Rams' first time, Goff looked very cold in the beginning. Now, maybe that's because of the helmet issues in the NFC Championship game, but they had to kind of get that rolling. And let's be honest, the Saints should have been up 21-0 to begin with anyway. I could see Brady and Belichick putting together a game plan where they just start to blow away the Rams' defense, find holes in it. And then once that happens, I think Goff, and whether it's C.J. Anderson or Gurley, whoever's trying to get, you know, reps at the running back position, I think they just can't keep up. They're just dejected and it all falls apart. That's my opinion.
And Chris, your guy Tiger Woods opens his season at Torrey Pines. I know you've already said it. He'll win a major in your opinion, but have you checked out golf's new condensed schedule? 4 majors in little more than 3 months, all pressed together. Chris, how will Woods handle that workload? And you say he's going to win one. Which one would it be of those 4?
Well, look, golf is a game about rhythm. And when you're hot and you're feeling good, you actually want to keep playing. That's why I've always wondered why Tiger doesn't just keep playing. And he's actually gotten back to that since the comeback of playing more tournaments, getting in a rhythm, getting that love, getting fans to see him again, like in the beginning of his career or his professional career. And I think that's so important. I've always said the Masters is special to Tiger. It's where it all began, his first major win in 1997 at Augusta. And while the course has changed a little bit at Augusta, and obviously the players around him have gotten more competitive and longer, it's still Augusta, and Tiger can still win that course. And I think that's his best shot, especially out of the gate, coming up off a hype and momentum of last season. Other than that, U.S. Open at Pebble in June, I think he could win there. I don't see him being able to win at the PGA or the British Open, as I still call it, or the Open Championship. So Augusta and U.S. Open, I think he's going to win the Masters this year. That's my opinion. Book it, Jay. Book it, book it, book it.
Thanks, Chris, which brings us to quickies, which are just that quick. On many levels, it's difficult to treat the Olympic movement with any sort of seriousness, but it's especially egregious when WADA, the World Anti-Doping Association, cuts deals with Vladimir Putin. Russia, the dirtiest doping nation of all, missed a deadline for turning over data on its doping program by almost 3 weeks, blew off the deadline, but WADA saw no problem in this and said it would not punish Russia. Okay. When the dopers and the doping cops are in bed together, it's safe to assume the Olympics are hopeless. And so far, Boogie Nights have been the best in town, as the old song goes, right? Boogie Nights, oh. I won't do that again. DeMarcus Cousins is playing his way into shape and having fun and making impact in the process. And when the five Warrior All-Stars, the Boogie Death lineup, are on the court together, they have outscored opponents 55-20 in 18 minutes. I know the Lakers without LeBron and the Clippers, but still, 55-20. So I don't really care that Steve Kerr and problem child Jordan Bell had an argument on the sideline. No drama, not even that long ago Draymond Green, Kevin Durant crisis. Sticks very long with this team. They've seen it all. They don't care. They get over it. And for that ability, I credit Steph Curry, who does have a way of making every problem disappear. Would he consider running for president? I'm serious here. I think Curry would tell you, I'd better try to make my dunks. He tried the other night in L.A. He fell on his ass. Then he retrieved the ball, shot a three air ball. It's hard to say who the king of global soccer is these days, but it's certainly not Cristiano Ronaldo. He was fined the equivalent of $21.6 million for tax fraud, avoiding a 23-month prison sentence. You would have gone to prison. I would have gone to prison. Not him. And he's also facing a rape allegation in the United States. Let's see. Lionel Messi, too old. Ronaldo, too troubled. Neymar, too goofy. Would you believe Kylian Mbappe? How's that for my soccer savvy? And as somebody who covered the Floyd Mayweather-Manny Pacquiao farce, when ripped-off fans wanted their money back, why would those same fans want a rematch 4 years later? Two old dudes in their 40s? Just forget about it. And I'd make a big deal out of a comment by LA Rams safety John Johnson, who called Brady an all-time great, but added, quote, he's beatable, though, unquote. But would anybody here in L.A. care? Fox reported only a 27.1 rating for the NFC title game here in the L.A. market. Of course, that was a warm, beautiful winter Sunday in Southern California. New Orleans, on the other hand, that local rating was twice as high at 59.5. I'm not entirely sure there would be a Super Bowl parade for the Rams if they won this game, because I'm not entirely sure many people know or care about the Rams in L.A. I mean it. I was in a bar, restaurant, cool place watching this game. There were five people there. They actually had rolled out this special Super Bowl presentation, all gaudy, brand new equipment, rolled it out. Five people there in a big, affluent part of Los Angeles, Brentwood.
And now a final Mariotti commentary too hot for ESPN, too smart for the internet, and too white male for Jemele Hill. Take it away, Jay.
As ESPN celebrates the dunks of Zion Williamson and the NCAA prepares for March Madness, it is my duty to remind you of the filthy reality out there. College basketball has been corrupt forever. And in the latest example of a sport refusing to acknowledge multiple levels of sleaze in the FBI-driven case, Kansas has petitioned the NCAA to reinstate one Silvio D'Souza, even though he is at the center of the investigation. You know, yeah, we're dirty, but how are we supposed to do Rock Chalk Jayhawk in March without Silvio? Miami has made a similar plea, and if you haven't noticed, the sport and its TV partners continue to carry on as if the FBI and these courtroom trials and the under-the-table dealings never happened. The NCAA already has said it won't rule on sanctions against dirty programs until after March Madness, meaning everybody will make their money and nobody has to worry about any of that. And so basically, the powers that be are allowing a few assistant coaches to take the hits with jail sentences while hoping this all blows away with Arizona's Emmanuel Book, that's his nickname, Richardson, the latest to take the hit as head coach Sean Miller keeps his lucrative job in the desert. Richardson was crying as he left the courtroom, and Sean Miller is probably on another wiretap. I, for one, will not let these toxic clouds blow away, but then that's why I don't work for ESPN, and proudly so. Triumphantly so. That's our show. For our producer and editor, Chris, I am Jay, reminding you to never, ever let anybody mute you in life. And as a musical tribute to Mariano Rivera, I think you know what's coming.